Wow, what a beautiful service so far. A lot of power here. I also just want to say that as the first Sunday of the new church year, it's an honor to be here with you guys. And it's fun to look at the gallery view of the Zoom and see people in their jammies and see people on the living room and see people all over the place in their car. So it's one of the great powers of what we're experiencing. Although I'm sad that we can't be together in a single physical space, it is quite extraordinary that we're able to gather together in the spaces that we currently occupy. And as we begin, also, I wanted to thank everyone who's behind a keyboard somewhere to make this virtual service possible. There's a lot of technology and a lot of good thought. So thank you very much for helping make that happen. And my guess is that we have all been there, en route somewhere between Alpha and Omega, and looking at a large two-dimensional map protected by plexiglass. The plexiglass that's scratched up and pocked and smudged from people pointing at it with their keys or a finger, a pencil or a penknife, maybe at a rest stop along a highway or a subway station in some big city. We're trying to figure out exactly where we are. And we're staring at a map aided by a big, bold arrow pointing to a very specific spot. And the arrow in the spot is accompanied by three very short and very profound and also very comforting words. You are here. You are here. You look around and you think, here. If you had a smartphone and a proper connection to a satellite, you could actually pin your location and determine the exact coordinates of longitude and latitude of where your current here is. And if you texted those coordinates to your friends in Madagascar or Mumbai, they would know precisely where you were located on our simultaneously vast and microscopic planet. Vast because our planet is vast. It's filled with nooks and crannies, buttes and fissures, rivers, thickets, bustling cities, sleepy outposts, and frog ponds, massive oceans, waterfalls. It can be very easy to get lost on a vast planet. So maps and coordinates and smartphones with satellite connections, they come in handy to help us figure out where our here is. And our planet is microscopic, actually, when it's relative to the vastness of our universe. Our tiny little planet with its hospitable atmosphere tucked into that narrow, what astronomers actually call the Goldilocks zone, that sweet spot that is just close enough and just far enough away from the sun that makes our planet not too hot, not too cold. Rotating and revolving in a solar system that is tucked in the Milky Way galaxy, itself tucked in a universe that's made up of at least 100 capital B billion galaxies. And I know that was a lot to take in. Here's a little bit more. Also, somebody's not muted, so I'm getting some feedback from out in the world. If you could just check to make sure that your microphone is muted, that would be fantastic. Very much appreciate that. So think of the enormity of that number for just a minute. 100 billion galaxies. There are so many galaxies that if you tried to count them all and you invested 1 second, merely 1 second, in counting each galaxy, you would roughly take 3,100 years to count every galaxy. And while I double check the math on that, you are absolutely welcome to go calculate yourself that number, which of course makes the sight gag even funnier. Picture of our beloved Milky Way galaxy with that flossy spiral of stars and that big bold arrow pointing to a specific spot in this star fog, and the arrow in the spot accompanied by three profound and comforting words. You are here. You are here. And you're here in both places at once, here at that byway between the Alpha and the Omega on our vast planet, and precise crossing of longitude and latitude, and you are here floating on this gorgeous speck of space dust that's tucked within a galaxy itself, tucked somewhere within a universe of 100 billion galaxies. And that contrast between microscopic and vast is precisely why all the French existentialists smoke cigarettes and enjoy their time discussing philosophy and soccer in cafes throughout Paris, which leads us to the classic teaching of the Buddha, which is slightly edited, on how difficult it is to realize our human form, to become an actual living, breathing human being, to achieve those first two critically existential words, you are, so that you could enjoy the third, here. Now, in this reading, the word bhikkhu roughly translates as monk. And while not appearing in this particular reading, there's also a feminine form called bhikkhuni, meaning nun. And it's interesting to note that the term bhikkhu actually comes from a verbal root meaning to beg, because the monks and the nuns, they had few worldly possessions, and they relied upon gifts from the community to keep enough food in their bellies to maintain their mindful Buddhist practice. And so the Buddha speaks first, and then a bhikkhu will respond. Suppose a person threw into the sea a yoke with one hole in it, and the east wind carried it to the west, and the west wind carried it to the east, and the north wind carried it to the south, and the south wind carried it to the north. Suppose there were a blind turtle that came up from the bottom of the sea once at the end of each century. What do you think, bhikkhus? Would that blind turtle put his neck into the yoke with one hole in it? Well, he might, venerable sir, sometime or other after a long period. Bhikkhus, the blind turtle would sooner put his neck into that yoke with a single hole in it than a fool, once gone to perdition, would take to regain the human state. Now, in other words, this human existence, your human existence, is less likely than a blind turtle surfacing from the bottom of the sea once a century and putting their neck through a hole in a floating yoke, and that the fool who was human, who squandered their consciousness and cycled back to a lower state, has a very long time to wait before realizing human form again. Meaning, of course, gaze at your beautiful body. Feel that warm beating of your heart. Realize that the precious existential reality of you are here is an absolute miracle. So let's create and cultivate a worldview and a daily practice that treats your existence as such, as miraculous. Which means, of course, the person next to you at the map who's squinting, trying to figure out where they are, is also a certifiable miracle. Your existence and their existence, all but impossible, and yet you're here. Here you are. And I think that we easily lose sight of the miraculous nature of our human existence. Put it another way, your life began when a single sperm won a race against 100 million other sperm, give or take, won the race to touch and ignite a single egg, which presented itself from a tight cluster containing anywhere between 1 and 2 million eggs. Impossible odds. One single sperm out of 100 million. One single egg from, I'm getting a message here. Okay. One single egg from 2 million. Timing just right. And what happens? In a vast sea, that blind turtle puts their head through the hole in the floating yolk, and here you are. It turns out that the Buddha's story aligns pretty well with biology. And when I think about the miracle of your very existence, of my very existence, I think about that first principle of Unitarian Universalism, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And I'll make the point again that I've made in previous homilies that the first principle is very careful to say specifically every person. and not the more general all people, every person, helping make up the vastness of the word humanity, is seen and cherished, every star in that galaxy named and seen and cherished. And when I consider that principle, I sometimes translate the words inherent worth and dignity as miraculous existence, the miraculous existence of every person. And I know that I shouldn't fiddle with the wording of our beloved principles, but imagine the powerful transformation of perception when centering your existence in the actual miraculous, and then seeing and experiencing every person, every worthy and dignified person, as the actual miracle that they are. And let us also include the hummingbird and the marlin, the grasshopper and the fruit bat, the sunflower, the mushroom, the oyster and the octopus, all of them miracles. And yet, if we're not careful, our miracle becomes mundane. Like the fool who squandered their human existence, we drift off towards becoming unconscious or non-conscious. And can you imagine a more woeful state of affairs when the miracle becomes mundane? And I use that word intentionally, woeful, full of woe. And worse yet, our miraculous existence becomes simply a boring routine unless we are conscious, unless we cultivate attention. Certainly one of the reasons why many people attend Sunday services, our minute this morning of meditation, cultivating attention. Because otherwise we can coarsen or dull our perceptions. We can wither our wonderment. We can squander this blessed existence and become dead before we die. Now in eighth grade, my English teacher proclaimed to a classroom of 13-year-olds that she was never bored. The world was just too interesting. And if we ever complained about being bored, that was a call to fire up our imaginations, to sharpen our powers of observation, to deepen our ability to wonder, and to improve our planning by carrying a good book with us at all times. Now, that was some tough love from Miss Dorman, but it was a life lesson that stuck to me like a burr. Unhappily so. And so whenever I feel boredom sort of creeping into my miraculous existence, Miss Dorman, she appears on my shoulder to say, in no uncertain terms, Joseph, find your book and open it. And so I bow to the fundamental and the inspirational lessons of all great eighth grade English teachers, all fearless prophets, all X-ray vision poets, all Buddhas under Bodhi trees, every nun sitting in meditation, every Jesus watching every foot of every disciple, every whirling dervish, every martial artist and their apprentices, billions of nursing mothers, and those grieving spouses with warm lips pressed to the cooling forehead of a loved one who had just died. Pay attention to the miracle. Pay attention within the miracle. And so let's take as a miraculous fact, the reality of three simple words. You are here. Okay. Now what? And when confronted with this question, the final two lines of a Mary Oliver poem comes to mind. Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? That poem's entitled The Summer Day, and here in the waning days of summer, here in the smoky days of our global pandemic that is teaching us in no uncertain terms the unignorable truths of the seventh Unitarian Universalist principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Let us bring voice to Mary Oliver's poem that has so much to teach us about our miracle. The Summer Day by Mary Oliver. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Now, how beautiful it would be to tack that poem at every publicly posted map accompanying that arrow in the phrase, "You are here. You are here. Now, tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? And if your life provides you with the privilege of choices, consider yourself blessed. Many billions of your fellow miracles have very few choices, and they call us to fulfill our second Unitarian Universalist principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. And because we have been privileged with choices, we have the responsibility of choosing well. Our UU principles are explicit and clear in helping guide us, especially our fourth principle, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Again, to call upon the French existentialists, I think this is exactly what they were doing in those Parisian cafes. They were searching for truth and meaning. They were smoking, they were drinking, they were discussing and arguing, they were riffing on ideas to be supported or supplanted, and then contemplating the mysteries of the universe, what they called the absurd universe. And I'd like to think that Albert Camus came up with this idea in the cafe, quote, "Against eternal injustice, people must assert justice. And to protest against the universe of grief, they must create happiness," close quote. Now, here I am with Camus 100 billion percent, assert justice and create happiness. And if I were sitting with him at that Parisian cafe, I would add two words, for all, as in justice and happiness for all. And all extends beyond the bounds of human-centered existence. I'm confident that he would agree. And this is what the poet is teaching us. You are free to hold a miracle in your hand and consider your fellow world citizen, the grasshopper. Study the intricate design of this particular insect, a design that took millions of years of evolution to create. How the grasshopper moves her jaw, how the grasshopper gazes with complicated eyes, how she washes, how she snaps her wings and floats away. You just held millions of years and perfect design in your hand. It reminds me of the hymn number 398 in our hymnal, Singing the Living Tradition, William Blake's short poem that's put to music. The lyrics are, "To see the world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wildflower, to hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour." I don't know exactly what a prayer is, the poet writes. I do know how to pay attention. You are here. The blind turtle found the hole in the floating yolk and put their head through. The greatest gift within your miracle is time. Consider that time sacred. Sanctify your time. Someday you won't have any more time. So right now, this Sunday morning, tucked somewhere here deep within 100 billion galaxies, savor your miracle by paying attention. Paying attention is a profound spiritual practice, perhaps the deepest spiritual practice. You were here. Now what? Well, that grasshopper in the palm of your hand is telling you everything that you need to know. Amen.